Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome everyone to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today, though, we have something a little bit different. For our season 4 first episode, we wanted to go start the season off with a bang. We have a special interview with Samantha Scafidi from the Terrifier franchise. She plays Victoria. But first, Corey, true horror story. Looked in the mirror this morning, my beard, an absolute nightmare. Dry, wild, looked like it clawed its way out of a crypt.
That's terrifying, man. Did you hit it with that beard octane?
Oh, yeah. Beard wash, conditioner, beard oil brought it back from the dead.
Fellas, don't let your beard turn into a creature feature. Keep it alive and kicking with beard octane.
And right now, hit beardoctane.com. Use code 30screams10. Get 10% off. Save some cash and save your beard from becoming a horror show.
Bad beard day? We've had plenty. Beard octane's the fix. We swear by it.
Samantha, thank you so much for joining us here at 30 Screams or Less. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so pumped. I'm glad you're doing well. We're going to just get into it because we like to keep it short and sweet here on 30 Screams or Less. I'm going to let Corey take the first question on this. If you don't mind, we have some questions for you, but we'll just make them short and sweet. Awesome.
Yeah, wing it. Do whatever you want. We wrote some stuff down, but
we like to have
don't answer your questions. Just
yeah, we'll just ask them all, and you can say just no, forget it, not doing it. I'm like, all right, I'm keeping that in. Corey, go for it.
All right. So when you first joined the Terrifier franchise, did you expect it would blow up the way that it has? Mm-hmm. It must be surreal walking into basically any store and seeing your face all over T-shirts and other pieces of merchandise.
Yeah, it's very surreal. I had no idea that it was ever going to blow up. And I always tell people jokingly now, because I love the film so much and I love being a part of it. And I love, everyone that's involved and the fans. But I took the film thinking that no one would ever see it. because the joke is, when I read it, I didn't know who Art the Clown was. I hadn't seen All Hallows Eve. I didn't know David portrayal of Art. I didn't know Damien. And so when I read it, Art doesn't really jump off the page of a Terrifier script. You read it and it feels very visceral and very violent. And so I remember having this moment where I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, how can I do something that's so violent? I didn't really understand at the time what it, the slasher genre was. I didn't know Damien, like I had mentioned. And now I'm absolutely in love with it. But I was like, no one's going to see this. And I've got nothing better to do. So. But it is surreal. We were talking about it right before we started the recording, was like the fact that the Vicky Hayes Funko Pops have just kind of been delivered on their first delivery. And I got a few to my house, and it's very surreal. It feels like a crazy honor to even think that there's a Funko Pop that's of the character that I portrayed in the Terrifier films.
It's wild, isn't it? It's got to be absolutely surreal just going I'm going to do this movie. It's going to be a cool thing. And you don't think much of it. But now you're a widely known personality because of this movie. I mean, Terrifier 3 was the number one film in America for a week and a half, 2 weeks, which is wild. Yeah. So it must be absolutely surreal to be even in one of the number one movies in the country. So that must be just so cool. You know what? I'm going to piggyback off of that question here. So on paper, one person could read the script, such as the one for Terrifier, and think that it's a bit outlandish and absurd. What drew you to the character of Victoria, and what resonated most with you on the script?
It's interesting, because when I was reading the script, it was the character. This is how I remember it about 10 years ago. I think at the time, Damien had not offered either part to me. He had offered me to audition for whichever part I felt most comfortable. I think he would have cast it how he casted it. But he said, do you want to audition? I think Jenna was already attached at the time. He said, do you want to read the part that Catherine ultimately portrayed, which is Dawn, or do you want to read for Vicky? And I don't think, like I said, I don't think it was that I was auditioning for Dawn, but just what I felt more comfortable with, I think, getting on an audition tape. Mm-hmm. So I had read it and I was like, I feel really connected to Victoria. And I think it was a combination of probably being at that point in my life. I was at around that age. I was in my 20s. I just gotten out of school. And just like, it just sounded like something that I would do, like getting out in the middle of the night, studying for exam and going to pick someone up. I did that very often in high school, where I always joke that I was like the designated driver, that I like designated myself to be the driver. And I would basically always be late for curfew because I was too busy driving everyone home, because we were a little bit rebellious, and we had definitely, some people were drinking before they were supposed to be drinking. Uh-oh. So
yeah.
So I definitely had it was in my nature to be that person who's always kind of coming to the aid of others or helping others. And I think that that was something that I was drawn to. Yeah, for sure.
Nice. And you went to school, I was reading, for business. Is that correct?
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
So what made you transition then from business to acting? Because obviously those are like two stark differences. But, when it comes to business, it works for basically everything. But it seems like one of those things where you went to school for a business and then you decided you want to be an actor. Right. So is there a pivotal moment in your life where you decided, like, you know what, I would love to move forward with acting?
Yeah, I think for me, I had gone to business school because I come from a family who's, I joke that I'm like the Marissa Tomei of lawyers, from My Cousin Vinny, where she's like, mm-hmm. My father's a lawyer, my brother's a lawyer, my brother's a lawyer. Like, literally, that's true. My cousins are lawyers. My sister-in-law's a lawyer. And I'm the only one in the family who went into like a creative industry, not necessarily because I have family that are lawyers, but they're extremely creative. In laws, there's a creativity to law, mm-hmm. And being a lawyer. But for me and my family, when my dad always said, you've got to get a degree, no matter what you do, you got to go to school, you got to get a degree. And I assumed, because I came from that kind of background, okay, it has to be business. It wasn't until I graduated and I told my dad that I was interested in other things, and he's like, oh, you didn't have to get a business degree. You just had to get a degree.
Okay.
So I was like, well, that's useful. But I always kind of was drawn to acting. And I remember I went to a summer camp when I was in my teens called Stage Door Manor in the Catskills in upstate New York. And so there was always kind of like this desire to kind of do it and to get into something creative. But that wasn't my background. And I was also an athlete. So I was primarily focused on sports and then going to get a higher education. And it was in college where we had, I'm trying to remember the curriculum. It was a very liberal arts education. So the first year you had to take core classes. They could be philosophy, they could be religion, they could be all these sorts of things outside of what your focus is.
Sure.
And I ended up taking a theater course. So I had taken the summer course at Stage Door Manor for two summers, and then I had gone into college and taken a course. And I remember that in the process of that, there was like this moment and there was a scene and we had prepared, and I was in the scene with my scene partner in college, and my scene partner like dropped their lines, and which we all do, but for some reason they had, and I like intuitively improvise the scene to keep it going, to get them to the next moment. And I just remembered this like rush and this feeling, and was like, holy shit, what is this? Like, after the scene was over, I felt like I was on like cloud nine or something. And that was like, I had like moments like that with acting where like something like that would happen. And when I got out of college, I had said to my dad, I had gone to school in Rhode Island, and I had gone to New York where my family was living. And I said, look, let me just take this course in acting for a summer. If I don't book a job, during that summer while I'm taking that intensive at this school, and the school was William Esper Studio. It was a Meisner trained program. I naively said, if I don't book an acting job, then I'll go into business. Which if I booked a job within a month or two, that would have been a miracle, because acting, you could not book a job for years. So what ended up happening is I took that course, and that course transformed me. It made me realize that I really had a passion and a love for it. And when one day when I was recapping that, when the intensive was over, I was explaining it to my dad in a cafe in the city, and he could just see my expression and how much I was in love with the craft and how much I was in love with that world. And he basically like proposed to me. He said, look, if you want to do this, I'll support you. But you've got to do it right, and you've got to go to school for it. And so, you know, do the 2-year program full time. Like, you've got my blessing and my support. And I feel very lucky, because I had the desire and I always had the interest. But if I didn't have the support, I might not have been able to kind of make that shift from business into acting. So
that's pretty amazing to have that support system to really have your back and allow you to do what it is you love to do. I always find it fascinating when I hear actors being like, you know what, I took the risk and I went for it. And, you know, it's changed your life. It makes you think like anyone can do it. Not anyone can do it. You know what I mean? Like, anyone could pivot their career. Like, if they're not happy with what they're doing, they can go into something creative, but you really have to work your ass off to do it. So I always find it fascinating, and I always find it inspiring as well. Yeah. So I think that's a great, thank you for that. Corey, I know you got questions. I don't want to hijack the interview here.
Okay. So the Terrifier films are known for pushing boundaries. Was there a moment on set that was particularly intense, funny, or surprising that really defined the experience for you?
Oh man. You know, I think after the first one, I kind of, because I've been in it for so long, after the first one, I kind of was in the world and desensitized, associated from it all. So nothing really surprised me after that. But there are many moments where you're just like in these scenes doing these horrible things and you can't help but laugh because you're like, this is absolutely absurd. I mean, in the third one, when we were doing the Aunt Jess scene and they were, and Sienna's character and Aunt Jess were tied in the living room. And thank God Margaret Ann was upstairs, like not looking at the monitor. But we were just like, what are we doing? Like, we had this dummy of Aunt Margaret Ann, and we're like shoving this tube into her mouth, and we're just like, what is going on? Like, and then I'm like taking fake rats and pretending to put fake rats in the tube, and then I'm taking real rats, and then having to kind of like gently, but make it look forcefully, trying to shove them down the tube. So it's like moments like that where you're like, it feels absolutely absurd and ridiculous. But just about the boundary pushing, I think that's the thing that excites me and really excited me about going into 2 and 3 with Terrifier, is that Damien's a boundary pusher. He like wants to know where the line is, and then he wants to move past it. And I think that that's exciting. I think that, I want, as an artist, I want to put myself in situations that make me uncomfortable or start discussions and conversations. And so I definitely feel like I embraced that after I got over my initial reaction to Terrifier.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that scene about the rat scene too, because we talked to David earlier this year and he kind of said something similar about that scene, because we asked him what really grossed him out, and he can't do vomit. Yep.
I know what he said to a T. I didn't even have to know.
You don't even have to listen to the episode.
Of events of what happened and how David tells that story. And then when I come in and then I'm breathing.
Yep, that's what he was saying. You were breathing on him.
I was breathing a mouthful of corn nuts while he was reacting to the vomit. that scene didn't bother me. It was just more of absurd, but that really bothered David.
Yep.
And we loved
it. It's funny out of all the things you guys do, and vomit is what gets to him.
That we always make that joke, because it's like, there are some brutal things, but who would have known that would be the thing that would, you know, almost break him? Yeah.
Do you have anything that almost broke you while filming these?
It's just like the prosthetics.
Yeah. I remember we had that conversation with you at Silver Scream, actually, and you said you're like, I can't see you guys. You're standing in front of me and I can't see you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, I forgot you. You met me with the mask on?
Silver Scream. Yeah. No. We met you at the table.
No, I was going to say we met without the mask, but then you saw me with the mask or.
Yeah.
We were talking about it, at least, about the prosthetics. Okay. And yeah, you're like, I can't see anyone when they're in front of me.
The reason why I had to ask again is because I don't remember who I met with and without the mask on. Yep. Because there were people who were, like, showing me things, and I was like, oh, cool. And then I, like, looked at the picture afterwards from those photo ops, and I was like, oh, I missed that whole other section, and I had no reference for... But I think the thing with Terrifier and the thing that I think for everyone, it's independent filmmaking and it's special effects, and a lot of the money for three especially went into the special effects, and it's worth it because it's one of the main draws and one of the main reasons a lot of people love the film so much. But it's definitely, I think everyone, when they're like, this thing is like glued on them and they're in freezing conditions, and you can't really see, everything's very technical. It can definitely test your limits, but I think in a really interesting way. I as much as I felt, I always joke that I suffered on set, like everyone equally was working just as hard and kind of under different conditions. But it definitely shows you what you're made of while you're making it, which is also like, kind of interesting.
Oh, I'm sure. And actually, I have a question that kind of goes with that. So we had an opportunity to meet you at Silver Scream Con, and we're not just saying this, but you were the highlight of the weekend. I know. I'm not saying that because I'm interviewing you. I'm not trying to be that guy. But you really took the time to interact with the fans, which is something a lot of actors neglect or take for granted. Can you tell us about your favorite fan interaction when attending horror-based conventions?
Oh, I don't have a favorite, but there are so many that stay with me for different reasons. I feel very, very grateful and humbled to be able to even go to conventions, and the fact that people even show up to see me or to see the films. That's something that never gets past me. I still like pinch myself that people are still just as excited and energetic and loving of the films and even just of the characters. So I feel like that I am just as much having such an amazing moment and a transformative moment when I meet people at these conventions. And I've met a lot of people who've shared really funny stories with me, have shared dark stories with me, have shared very courageous things with me, and a lot of it, and I speak openly about it. Some of the most touching moments is when people have shared their survival stories and what horror means to them. Because I think the going back to the first question, or one of the questions you asked about, and me responding about the first reading that script, wondering how can I bring something like this that's so violent to life. I tell people all the time I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and around that time that I was reading that script, I was going through my abusive relationship, and that's what made it so difficult to say, how can someone like me bring a film so violent to life, right? And over the course of 10 years, I've met so many amazing people who, when I question them, like, why do you like these films so much? Like, the violence, I need to understand, because I didn't grow up in horror. They've shared that it was something that taught them to fight back, that watching heroines have taught them to fight back in their abusive relationships, and they found empowerment through the genre. And that was just something that really helped me, I think, heal in my own way, and also like really fall in love with the genre, which has changed my life in these interactions. So it's just so many interactions that I am forever grateful for, but I know that there'll be more to come.
Yeah. I remember having that conversation with you at Silver Scream when we waited in your line and got up to you, and you asked us, how did you find Terrifier? Or what did you like about it? It was something along those lines. And I felt bad because we had this like really long conversation, and you have a line of, a ton of people behind us. like we're holding up the line, but we're having such a cool conversation.
No, you're not holding up the line. Everyone knows that when they're in my line, I'm a talker and I talk to people and I'm always feeling guilty. But then I'm like, okay, maybe when they get to me, they'll understand that like it's me. I'm the one who's taking the time and that hopefully it's a good thing.
And that kind of goes back to what Steve said. Like, you were one of the highlights of that convention because you take the time to talk to people. You're not just rushing through your line, you know?
Oh my God. I feel like, first of all, people, they save up so much of their money and their time to come and have this experience. And like I said, I'm very lucky to do what I do. And the fact that people even want to come see me. But I couldn't think of an alternative to not take the time. That would feel very wrong.
Oh yeah. Sure. I've had some people I met, they just go through the motions, don't even talk to you, just take the photo, sign something, and then move on. And it's such a negative experience. You're like, my first experience with you was hilarious because you're like, "Hi, I'm Samantha." I'm like, "I know that."
I can't. First of all, sometimes there are people that come to the table and they're like, "Who are you? What the hell are these films?"
Yeah,
but that's not why I do it.
Right.
It feels like, since I'm meeting you for the first time, we've got to really be introduced to each other.
I agree. I thought that was too funny, and like it was a great way to start. And then we had this like great conversation with you, and now we're having another great conversation. So, and I think that this is pretty much how we like hooked up here. Is that we talked to you there? And we're like, "Oh yeah, we're like with the 30 Screams Less podcast. We would love to have you on," and we just made it happen. So this is great. I think I have a few more questions for you, if you don't mind. We got time. Let's see. Nope, that Corey basically asked that one already. We doubled up on questions. Okay.
That's why we do this together.
I'm sure I answered it in one of my like long-winded responses. I also probably answered another question somehow.
Yep, Corey, I think you should go because like I just blew through my questions in no time. So, yeah, okay. Go over.
All right. So how much input did you have in shaping the Victoria character, including the makeup, and what parts of her personality or your journey were influenced by your own ideas?
Oh, well, Victoria, I mean, that's Damien's character in the sense of like, you know, from Terrifier and who she was on the page for sure. And definitely the look, like Damien is the master of creating such amazing characters and creatures in art, in Victoria and in just even just, the special effects in general. But Damien, though, always... I think there was probably something he saw in me in one when he was filming with me, yep. Where he was like, and I think there was like a few moments on set, and there's even that image that he kept in, which I always thought was interesting when where I get sat down by the guy who works at the warehouse. And I'm kind of like staring off into space and I'm kind of dissociating. And I kind of, there's like a moment where I read it and project onto that moment that he selected where I look like a little off, you know, like there's something else going on there, like a little bit too intense. And I always thought that was an interesting moment because at that point she wasn't kind of going into the villain kind of landscape. That was only in Terrifier 1 and we didn't know where she was going to go to. So I think... And then Damien getting to know me just knows I'm batshit crazy, like semi-disturbed. So I'm sure maybe subconsciously somewhere he's like, "Oh, it'd be interesting, you know, for Sam to kind of go in that direction." But I think by 2 and 3, it was just I would receive the call and the email and the script, and she was there and she was fleshed out. And in 3, he had such specific things that he wanted of Vicky. He wanted her to be like filthy mouths. He wanted her to be like manic and unpredictable and terrifying, hilarious. So he definitely mapped out that Vicky for me. And then I kind of went off and did my own research and tried to do as much as I could to bring depth to that role in the physicality and also in, I think, trying to figure out how to make such jarring movements and move in between emotions kind of like that, you know, in within a second. But he really, like, Damien's just masterful. He really laid the groundwork, and then he allowed us the freedom to explore and to deepen.
That's amazing. You know what? This kind of goes with that. I found the story arc with Victoria to be really interesting because it starts off with, you know, you're a college student. You're just studying. You go pick up your sister, and then, you know, you get mauled. But... Mm. So from there, it turns into, like, I think in the second film, you gave birth to Art the Clown's head. And then...
Tell me why Damien always wants me to do the most absurd things in these films.
I don't know.
There's, like, a few of those moments we can think about that we know about that we're like, why did I, my character seems to only be the one that's birthing heads and doing things with pieces of glass.
Right. Oh,
oh my God. I love that people made up a term for
Blasterbation. Blasterbation. Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. But yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, no, no. Like, we love doing that here. Like I said, we try to keep it just casual. So yeah, you went from that and then you went into Terrifier 3, where you had, like, I would think a more pivotal role as an antagonist, and you almost turned into like a demon. Am I wrong here? Like,
I'm possessed.
Okay.
No, I'm fully possessed.
I'm just wondering, like, how it happened. Like, because, well, maybe we'll find out in Terrifier 4 how you became possessed when you started off as like just a kind of a normal college girl and then went into like this possessed demons.
Well, I can tell you I can fill in the lore that's already been on screen.
Okay.
Which is in one, you know, there's something, the lore is that she was a victim of art, but through her disfigurement and the trauma, she kind of descends into madness. And at that point she becomes so vulnerable that she becomes like the basically this entity, the little pale girl, is able then to access like the earth or the physical plane. And they do it through Victoria. And when she births the head, that's when her eyes light up and she's completely possessed and incapable of having any autonomy or agency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the birth is like the actual like kind of event that occurs that enables her to become possessed. But at that point, she's so broken. So in 3, when, you know, Sienna talks about it with Jonathan kind of in that room, I think off in... when he's at school and she comes to visit him, she says that this entity, they basically had to break Victoria down to be vulnerable enough to then become taken over. So she had to burn the head for that to be completed, which is, you know, it's just Damien's take on that.
But
it's interesting because to what you were asking about, which is the progression of that, you know. One thing I love about Damien is he treats it obviously as a mini series, and every film he's asking questions and over time he's answering them. And there's so much that he's answered in 3 finally for fans, but in 4, I'm sure there'll be even more that he's going to answer. But one thing is that Victoria's direction wasn't always going to be in this direction. She was only supposed to be a survivor, and then 2, she was supposed to have you guys heard of the story of when Art was supposed to come out of the back of Vicky's head in 2?
No,
I don't think
okay.
so.
Okay, oh,
yeah, let's hear okay. this.
Breaking news.
I always had a scene at the end of 2, which was what is now the birthing scene.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene at the end credit scene was that she was going through kind of a moment where and Art is basically coming out of the back of Vicky's head. The problem was we filmed that with Jericho. There's this whole scene. There's a whole food fight, a bunch of other stuff that happens. And before he started to edit it, Malignant came out.
Oh yeah.
Similar to that. Okay, I remember this.
Almost identical to that, I was told.
Yeah.
But we hadn't edited the film at that point. So Damien had to go back to the drawing board. And that's when, you know, I birthed the head as opposed to it coming out of the back of my head, which enabled Vicky to survive for 3. Because if he would have come out of the back of my head, the character would have been dead.
Yeah. So. And then you guys kill Burke in the beginning of the 4th movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was the moment where Damien's like, I've got to rethink kind of this end scene because it doesn't work because it was identical. And then all of a sudden, I think that's when something clicked with him and he was able to really, because I know that Dame has always known where it's going to start and where it's going to finish in terms of the main characters with Sienna and Art. But I think with Vicky, that's been something that I always joke to people, every film I thought I was dead in. It wasn't until after we filmed it, Damien's like, wait, we're bringing you back.
You're like, all right.
You had a face
in the first movie.
Yeah, I'm very grateful that that he brought me back and it went in that direction. But it's been interesting, the evolution of Vicky and that character arc, because it's not that you don't see characters turn into monsters or like your kind of female leads turning into monsters in films, but to see that kind of happen to a final girl over the and then over the course of the original final girl of one, and then to see that over the course of three films, and then like kind of parallel to Sienna's character is pretty unique. So
yeah, that's it's a wild story arc, and I'm glad that you were throughout like all the movies and they didn't just like, you know, finish you off and at the end of this,
this I wasn't just like forgotten somewhere in some mental institution.
Yeah. Oh, gee. Well, I mean,
she just had to do a few nasty things before she really meets her end.
Right.
That's kind of what I thought was going to happen the way that two ended. I'm like, are we done with Vicky now? Like, what's going on? And then you became like a huge part of the third movie.
Yeah, I always wonder if people saw that coming or not at all. I don't think many people saw that coming.
I didn't.
Not at all.
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. I thought it was always going to be about Art the Clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you were almost like, I don't know, I think I referred to you as a conduit or something, like an entity that Art needed in order for him to like have strength. That's kind of what I was thinking as I was watching it. Like, well, that kind of makes sense in like my head. But yeah, you know, I was kind of thinking too, is that in a lot of religious horror movies, there's like a lot of it has to be with like broken people who are getting possessed, you know, by demons and stuff. And so it sounds like it's almost like that. Like Victoria became so broken in the first one that it allowed her to be evil and then be possessed by this entity. And then you have the absolute insanity of Terrifier 3 with the glasturbation, you know.
We love talking about it.
Yeah.
People always come to my table when they meet me like, do you mind if we ask? I'm like, is it about the glass scene? I'm like, lay it on me.
First time I saw it, I was like, oh my God. Even I like, well, there's some stuff where I can just, it doesn't bother me. You know, you've been watching horror movies for a very long time. Corey showed me a movie before. I'm like, okay, this is a bit much. And but I saw that scene. I'm like, oh my God, this is a bit much. But
yeah,
that scene, that particular scene, because Steve, we live in New Hampshire and we don't get a lot of, they don't show a lot of good shit here. We had to drive to somewhere to Massachusetts to see Terrifier 3. And the theater was full. And when the glasturbation scene started, you could hear a gasp from the whole audience.
Pardon me. Yeah.
I love it. You're like, it's funny because a lot of people come to the table and a lot of horror Terrifier fans are like, nothing bothers them. But then you do get the little group of horror fans who are like, nothing bothers me except for that scene.
Yeah.
And I feel like when they tell me that, it's like a badge of honor, because if I can make anyone uncomfortable with anything that I'm doing in any film, that especially a horror film and especially a Terrifier fan, that makes me feel very proud.
Oh yeah. So. That was me. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fine with most stuff. And then I see that, I'm like, oh no.
It did upset people. Some people though.
Yeah.
They're like, why was that even necessary?
Yeah. Actually, I do have a few bugaboos, like teeth stuff kind of messes me. Eye stuff. Just,
I don't like eye
stuff. Yeah. I can't do eye stuff.
Or fingernail stuff.
Oh, I can't. God. No. Yeah. Yeah, fingernails. Anytime you see those scenes where the fingernails like bend back, I'm just like, oh no, I hate this.
No, I can't.
No.
It's like the little
I get
pains.
Steve all the time.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, he gets me all the time. I'm just like, ugh.
I'll find something gross that I know triggers him, and then I'll text him a link to like an Instagram reel or something with no context.
I love that nowadays you can just like send something on social media. I'm not really active on social media very much. I only have an Instagram, I have a Twitter, but I don't go on Twitter at all.
Yeah.
But I've been told that there's you can find anything on these things now.
Yep.
And I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah, the stuff that he sends me is insane. A lot of it is death stuff. It's always death stuff.
Is it real death stuff or is it stuff? Oh God.
Why? How are they showing this? Stuff. Yeah. How are they showing this on Instagram? Don't they block this?
Why do you open it now? you must know by
morbid
now.
Morbid curiosity, I guess.
Yeah. It's an exchange. You enjoy it. He enjoys sending it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. What do we got today?
Yeah.
My algorithm is tailored just perfectly right now to the stuff I want to watch.
Yeah.
Oh,
then I have to share it with Steve.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. I like watching.
I was trying
stuff.
To have mine like heavy metal, video games, but no. Now it's a whole bunch of death, Corey. Thanks a lot.
Oh God,
I don't want this.
Oh,
yeah.
That would definitely get to me. I would definitely. I'd have. Yeah. I'm not. I cover my eyes in terror.
Yeah.
So if you can only imagine.
Don't give Corey your number.
Now I will definitely not.
Just block him. You know, just make sure you don't get anything.
Yeah, that will be any DMs. The good thing I don't look at my DMs.
Oh, I bet. I hear stuff that girls get in their DMs, and it's like it's nuts. You know,
I think it's everyone though. I don't think it's just women anymore. I feel like I've heard stories of men getting stuff as well.
Yeah.
You
get them? So it's just Corey.
No, I turn notifications off for DMs because it's just bullshit. You know, I don't want to. If I want to talk to you, I'll text with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a random spam bot sending me a DM.
Well, that's true too. I've heard that sometimes you don't even know if you're talking to a real human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve falls for it all the time when people DM us.
I get bored. And I just do it.
Yeah, you get bored. No, you think it's a real person every time.
You're just entertaining it.
I entertain it. Half the time I entertain it, and Corey watches me and he makes fun of it. And I'm like, no, I'm just bored and I want to see where this goes. And I'm like, I'm waiting on that WhatsApp link or something. Mm. And I'm like, I knew it. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, I believe
I want to see how good this AI is or this spammer is.
It's very good.
Yeah, it really is. Some of them are sophisticated stuff these days. But
yeah, Gary.
Yeah, I don't know. I get bored. So Corey, yeah, I only got two more questions left, and I see you have a whole bunch. So why don't you keep going?
I don't have a whole bunch.
What are you talking about?
I have a couple.
I'll be quicker with my response. We'll
I don't want to keep her. Yeah, I don't want to keep you too long.
All right,
so
can I go with another question then?
No.
Well, fuck you then. Jeez.
Go ahead.
All right, I've got one then. If you had a magic wand and had the ability or the immediate ability to work with a dream actor or director, who would they be and why?
Oh, well, you know, I guess it's just whenever the first one comes to my mind, but I really love Jessie Buckley. She's in the new Hamnet, but she's been in a bunch of stuff. I just think she's so interesting and she's such a talent as an actor. She's an actress, of course. I saw a few interviews with her recently and I think she's a brilliant mind too. So that was someone who cause I also, and I would like to work with her as cause I write and direct. I don't know if you guys know that, but I moved into that five or six years ago. And so now, since I don't really act as often, because I only really came back to act with Terrify, even though I love acting and will always act as long as, you know, the role's great and, you know, it's something that comes to me. But I really primarily pursue writing and directing now. And so I think of working with people, I think a lot in the capacity of as a director, working with them as an actor. So I would love to one day, it would be a dream to work with Jessie Buckley as me being the director and her being the actor.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what, but maybe I'll have to write something for her. And then director. I mean, I wanted to say Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love, I haven't seen Frankenstein yet.
Me neither.
I haven't seen it, but I want to. But, you know, Pan's
Amazing.
Labyrinth. Destroyed me when I had seen it, you know, a long time ago.
Yep.
But then I was going to say him, but then I was like Scorsese because he's older and I need to work with him before he goes because.
Right.
Yeah. Get it in while you're in
the 70s now, right?
And he's brilliant. And I come from a family of New York Italians and it would be a sin if I didn't say that.
fair enough. What did I watch yesterday? Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. He directed that. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is on TV. I'm like, all right, well, I'm stuck here now.
And it's oh, just, yeah. What do you think with Scorsese? And like Goodfellas. Like,
Goodfellas is so.
There's a new documentary on him too.
Oh,
that I haven't
yes, and that's
seen
on my
yet,
list. But, you're
yep,
right.
Same.
That's on my list.
Becoming Scorsese, I think it's
yeah,
called.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
I think it's on Apple, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. I only know about it because his daughter randomly popped up on my TikTok algorithm one day, and she does videos with him.
Yeah.
And she was promoting it.
So no death this time. Okay, you got something quite useful out of it.
I said TikTok. Instagram shows me.
Yeah, TikTok's different.
Okay, got it.
He's got one for death, one for Scorsese. And
yeah.
Yeah, so I've okay. Well, you know what, Corey, go ahead. My question is kind of like a final question.
Okay. So Art the Clown and Vicky have both become horror icons. Do you have a favorite behind the scenes moment with David that fans might not expect?
Not that they wouldn't expect because we're very much like our relationship. I feel like on screen is very much our relationship off screen. Like three, like we already tease each other, but we have like a very loving relationship. But I always go back to Terrifier when there was like only 8 or 9 people in the crew and it was just like really David and I filming together and it took a bit of time to set up the shots just because we were so limited with resources and with crew members that we'd have like an hour 2 or 3 hours just to like wait or chill or collectively. And we had so many videos that we both are like, where did those videos go of just like us goofing off. Like some of the videos made it where like, riding the little bicycle, and then Damien's riding the bicycle and then I'm riding the little bicycle and that stuff is somewhere online somewhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other like random videos that I'm like, where did these come from and who put them out there? Cause I didn't even realize they were out in the world, but there was around the time that we were shooting Terrifier, it was like Adele's song, Hello, came out.
Yep.
I think it was like, yeah.
Okay.
And Damien was like in makeup and he was like, not shirtless, but he had like probably a tank or something on or whatever. And he would do this thing where he would like turn the chair around and every time she'd say hello, he'd come and go hello. And it was just like this whole exchange that we had, but we can never find the videos. And we so badly wanted to put it online at the time. And Damien was like, don't you fucking dare. Like you're going to ruin the character. Like nothing goes online. Now he doesn't care. Damien's like, whatever.
Right.
But there was that time that we were goofing off and probably that one moment that I could never do it justice explaining it to you. You'd have to see the video, but it was very special.
Oh, I bet that was funny. I know David, David has, like, we had him on the show and he's hysterical and he's just like a fun guy to talk to. Mm. So, but he goes into character as soon as he's got the whole getup on. With as Art the Clown. So you probably caught him in that transitional period of like, okay, I don't have the full suit on yet. I'm still getting makeup on. I'm in the tank top. But as soon as like he goes into that mode, he's very method from what I gather, right? I mean, or did you make him break a little bit?
No, I don't know what David said, but David's very, once he's the camera rolls, he's in character.
Okay.
And if anyone outside of like the core is around him or any fans, he will not break because he's very much in the character. He doesn't want to ruin that for anyone. But I mean, when you're shooting like 12 plus hours sometimes a day and, we all talk to each other, and we like whisper but once the camera's on, he's in it. There have been moments when we've been shooting where I've broken with David in a scene and he somehow kept it together. But I think when it's not rolling, he's a little bit more fluid. He's very fluid.
Got it. So
are you the same way when you're in character?
Good question.
I try to be as serious as I can be. I do take it very seriously, but oh man, I broke so many times. And there's moments where I'm just like, I always joke that you can hear me like groaning while I'm in prosthetics and it's cold. I'm just like, ah. Or Damien's like coming over and the blood's dried on my body and he has to like spray me down with some cold water. And I'm just like, ah, like, but there were moments where like, there one moment specifically I'm thinking about in one where David, I'm supposed to put, I put blood in my mouth and it's when I'm on the ground after I've been hit by the car and David's like over me. Mm-hmm. And we had probably been filming for like 12 hours and I was laying on the ground and Damien's like, okay, once you put all that blood in your mouth, it had to be a lot because blood had to come out the side. So I can't swallow it. So I have to be really careful to keep it at the front of my mouth. But I'm also laying back and David, he just was like over me and he was breathing. And I think it was a combination of knowing I couldn't fuck up because if I start to laugh, it's, I'm either going to swallow it and choke or it's going to get on my face. And then we've got to reset and blood. That blood's not easy to kind of clean off.
Nope.
I just could not stop laughing. Like I was just like trying so hard. And it was just for some reason, David's close proximity and like breathing over me in character, just I just made me like break. And Damien at one point was like, "We've got to get the shot, guys." Like, he was getting very upset, and that was hard to come back from. I it took me like a minute to get my shit together. So,
wow, that's funny. I'm picturing like a broken fountain when you're like laughing and it's just squirting up all over. And Damien's probably like,
I mean, that
damn
would have
it.
Been more ideal than the dripping down the side and then Damien like having to like clean it and then reset the makeup. Mm-hmm. And oh man. Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff. So I think I have like just one more question and I don't know how much you have, Corey, but
just a couple if we can get it.
You know what?
Yeah.
You know what, Corey, I'll let you keep going. Mine, like I said, mine is an ending question.
Okay. So I just got in October to go. I went to Florida to go to the Halloween Horror and it was my 40th birthday this year and I really wanted to see the Terrifier house. Did you get to go to the Terrifier houses at all and witness that?
I went to the LA Haunts Halloween Horror Nights, which is really, really cool. I was supposed to go to Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando, but I had flown in the day that I was supposed to go. And a red eye. Mm. And I did not last the day. So I missed, but everyone else got to see the Orlando, Halloween Horror Nights for Terrifier. And I mean, I was blown away when I saw the one in LA and I've only heard just as good, if not better things about Orlando. So I was so upset I didn't go see Orlando. Cause I heard
it ruined my wife.
Why did it ruined your life? You
no
said?
Wife.
My wife.
Oh, your wife. Why?
Everywhere we go now, she'll like this because it did the smells. She'll smell the cleaning things and she'd be like, is that Terrifier? Are we in the Terrifier house?
Oh, no.
Because they nailed the scents. I can't believe they were able to do that.
Well, someone was telling me that there was a room that literally smelled like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a, and they were telling, one, someone told me in Orlando when we were there that their friend was the person who was playing Vicky and Vicky was in that room and they had asked her how she was able to do it. And I guess she had put incense like underneath her nose so that she could. So I was like, good on them. Because mm-hmm. that must have been terrible to have to be in that space and just be around those smells.
Yeah, it was a bathroom scene. It was like when you leave, it was these like wires hanging from the ceiling with shitty underwear.
Oh God.
And you had to part the underwear.
No.
To get
what a nightmare. Oh my goodness. Just...
Maybe I don't feel so bad that I didn't go.
Jeez.
I mean, I've had enough with Terrifier and shooting Terrifier. Do I need to be re-traumatized?
No.
Yeah, you did the real thing. You're good.
Some of those actors though are amazing. They really take their job seriously at Halloween Horror Nights. I've been there once. I didn't get to go to the Terrifier one, but I went there once, and they are next level when it comes to like scare actors.
They're unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, and the fact that they do it and they do it, but and they're finding creative ways to get the next person. Yeah, I was super impressed, and also like hats off to people wearing the prosthetics because. Like the people who are doing Vicky in LA, like, and I'm assuming it's the same for Orlando. They did like, you can't see out of that. And, you know, they're covered. So yeah, I've met, it's really, really awesome. And there was one art in LA that we literally were like, I've never seen someone look so like David.
Yeah, they picked
like
the right
all of us were like, there was a guy at the entrance from the house when we were there. And we're like, he could almost be David. Like I had to do a double take. Usually I can tell who David is by the way he walks, the shoulders. And it's just David's very distinct. But this person was like a very close lookalike. So I was super impressed.
Did they have a wet path at the LA one?
I didn't see it. There was a room. I don't think so. There was a room that was a little wet, but it wasn't like what I've heard at Orlando. So because I didn't see Orlando, I'm not 100% sure I've heard there are two paths in Orlando.
Yeah, you get, obviously I think it was called the bloodbath path, and they have an art up at the top. He's like on a riser and he's up there with severed arms.
No.
And he's pointing you down the wet path or the dry path. And I'm with my wife and I'm like, we're going down the wet path. And she's like, no, we're fucking not. I'm like, yes, we are.
Did you split at that end? Did you?
No,
you
go one way, I grabbed another? I grabbed her hand and I was like, let's go. We're doing this.
Did you have any like poncho on or anything?
No, we were actually talking to Phil at Silver Scream this year. Yeah. And he said they wanted to have ponchos that changed color when you went through the wet path.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, no. So we just committed to the bit and got fucking soaked.
Yeah.
Nice.
But it was awesome. It was totally worth it.
It was clear, right? It just, the lights made it look like it was red.
Yeah. It's okay, almost like a sewer. You're walking through a sewer and it's just dripping from the ceiling.
Okay.
But you can't hide from it.
Oh, that would have been cool. It would have been cool.
Yeah.
You know what
it was cool. I was very, very impressed with how they did the whole thing. Even when you walk in, they have the theme song playing. I was like, this is awesome. And then obviously the Clown Cafe song is in there.
Yeah. I mean, I was insanely impressed and just in awe in LA. And then, like I said, I kept hearing about Orlando and I'm just like, that's another pinch me moment. Like when we talk about the success of Terrifier and being like even honored and recognized in that way. Mm-hmm. Halloween Horror Nights is like, that's just epic in so many ways.
I mean, you have lines, 4-hour wait times of people trying to walk through this thing.
Yeah.
I got lucky. I don't know how it happened, but they have two lines. They have an express pass line and a regular line. Mm. We just had the regular line because an express pass is like $300.
Oh yeah.
I'm good. I'll wait. So we get to the lady that is working the door at the Terrifier line and she looks at our ticket. She waves us through the express lane. And we waited like
nice
10
on
minutes.
Her. That's awesome.
Right. I was like, I'm here. I'm literally in this park right now just for this. And I get to walk through this. You know, I get to skip the line. Like,
wait, that's awesome.
Locked up.
What are the chances? Right.
Well, thank God. Cause that would have been that. I mean, I respect anyone who could wait that long. That's tough.
You should have seen it. Just a sea of people waiting to walk through your house. It's insane.
Oof. Wild. Absolutely wild. I wish I could have seen it, but
same.
Yeah. Next year, Corey, I don't know. What is it? Next year, maybe a year after, we're going to Halloween Horror Nights and you and I will get to go. So that way, like, you know, we don't subject Joanne to these, these houses.
Sam, you should have heard my wife. She's like, I'm never doing this again. You have to convince Steve to go to these with you.
Is she is she into horror or any of this stuff?
Not at all, but she'll catch, like, because I watch it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, she'll walk in because her thing is she doesn't do torture. So I watch the Terrifier movies on repeat.
Oh, you can't bring her to the Terrifier house then?
Mm-mm. Well, she did it. She was a champ.
Heck yes, she did. That's an amazing partner.
Yeah.
Yes, she did it for me, man. It was my 40th birthday this year, and it was her idea to go. So,
oh, that's like, awesome.
To take me. So,
yep, yeah. She committed to the bit.
That's amazing. That's an amazing gift, though, especially when someone's like, can't do it. Like, usually they're not, that's not their thing to support. Yeah. I love the supporters. I've met so many supporters at my table who are just there. They've never seen Terrifier, don't want to see Terrifier, but their partners are obsessed with it. So,
yeah. She knows. She comes into my office where you can see behind me. There's all this all over every wall in this room. So
yeah, she's like, no, like, hey, how's it going?
I'm like, all right. I don't know why I came in.
So, this is more actually for you to like promote what you have coming up. I mean, is there anything you have coming up that you would actually like to promote?
I was in a short film called Ocaso that is just play it's playing the festivals. So that hopefully I'll have information soon. It already played in Spain, and we're waiting on a few more festivals. I'm just an actor in it. So that's one thing that's coming up. And just what I tell people all the time is I have a Substack, and I write essays and sometimes poetry, and I cause you know writing is something that I really love, and if they want to get inside my mind or hear my thoughts, that's probably a place where they can do that. And yeah, I'm just in the process of writing and developing my first feature film that I'm hoping to direct in the next year. So that's what I've been focusing on.
Nice. I'll have to make sure that I put a URL to your Substack, like at the very bottom. That way people can know where to go and check that out. But
Yeah,
you'll
of
have to
course.
send that to me. Or I'm just good enough to actually find
Or
it
they can go
anyway.
to my Instagram page and the bio. There's the links for all that.
Yeah, link in bio, all that stuff. Got it. Yeah, I think that's pretty much for me, it for me. Corey, did you have one more question?
I had one more, and I don't know how much you can touch on it, but I was just wondering if you could tell us absolutely anything about Terrifier 4, as far as maybe when it's
I
filming, when it
wish
may
I
come
could
out.
tell you, because and not even
Okay,
because
I
no, not
figured.
even because I'm like not allowed to. All I know is what Damien has literally said in front of me at conventions, which is, well, and this is probably a month ago, so I'm sure there's new updates, but that he's writing it, he's almost finished with it, and they're planning to shoot it in 2026. And I don't know anything in regards to my character. I don't know if I'm in it. John Elliot and I are always like, we have no idea. Elliot, who plays Jonathan.
Yep.
So when we don't, but I'm sure at some point we'll find out, or we'll find out with the fans. But in regards to just what he said, you know, he's gonna go a little bit more into the origin story of art, and the ending in the last 45 minutes is supposed to be batshit insane.
All right.
Oh,
So
okay.
I'm very excited to. I hope he lets me read the script, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah. My theory for Jonathan was Sienna Shaw is going to fight Art the Clown, and I don't know, maybe a different dimension or something like that, but she's going to have his skull hanging by his side, and he's going to be a talking skull. And Corey hates the idea.
That would be
Jonathan's
hilarious.
not dead. Jonathan's not dead. This
You
is
know,
my
I thought
theory.
he was, and then Damien messed me up at a convention because I'm like, yeah, he's dead. And then he was like, no, we'll find out in 4. And I'm like, what the fuck?
You're
I'm
like, I'm
so
in a fucking
confused.
movie. Come on.
No, but I hope he is alive because I love Elliot, and I would love. I mean, he doesn't have to be alive or dead to be in Terrifier. I mean, so many people come back in
True.
Terrifier,
Yeah.
but I love Elliot, and I love him as that character. So
Yeah. We haven't met
I'm
him
rooting for
yet,
him.
but
Oh,
yeah.
he's
He has
wonderful.
eight.
He's the best. Everyone in Terrifier is. I say this all the time. There's not a bad egg. Everyone's very wonderful, talented, but also very humble and grateful. And yeah, it's a good bunch.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate and got to talk to a few of you now from the franchise, and every single one, you're all very humble. You're very awesome to talk to, and yeah, it's just you're talking to a person. It's a lot of like actors and actresses aren't that way,
I
They
find
just
though in the
rush through things and
horror genre, a lot of people, especially people who play villains, are really down to earth.
yeah.
Or you know, it's interesting. The horror, I don't know. I haven't really had that much experience meeting so many people from other genres, but I've had a lot of really great experiences with people from horror. Maybe it's
It's
just like
refreshing.
the process of filmmaking is very humbling. So.
Exactly. All right. So I know we're at time. You gotta get going. Samantha, thank you so much for interviewing with us today. This has been a pleasure. We always say this to all our guests, if you're in town and you want to meet up for drinks, like at the convention or something, we'll hook you up. We'll pay for your drinks, all that stuff. I don't know if you drink or anything like that, but we offer it anyway.
I don't really
Yeah,
drink. Not that I'm sober, but I don't really drink.
okay.
I don't. But it doesn't
Well,
mean I won't have a. Well, I do drink water, and I do drink, you know,
we'll buy
sparkling
you a
water.
water.
So.
Well, we'll buy you nice water, like not Dasani or anything like that.
We'll buy you a fee. Hey, fuck you, man. I work for the company that makes that shit.
I'll take it. Listen, water is water, you know.
Water is life.
Cool. Yeah, we're at Silver Scream every year, so maybe we'll see you again.
I hope so. That was a great convention, and that was, I had a lot of fun at that one.
Yeah, us too. But Samantha, thank you so much again. All right, everyone, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit shiningwizardsnetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30screamsorless.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out beardoctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies. And be sure to use the code 30screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30screamsorless@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30screamsorless. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.